I had received a book in the mail that was about a magician named Harry Houdini. And Houdini was a great illusionist of this century who was a decidedly non-spiritual person, a very, very unique character. They described Houdini in there as being able to do these great tricks and how in order to perform these tricks you had to use illusion and you had to use deception and smoke and mirrors and chicanery, and your purpose on stage is in entertainment is to convince the audience that this is really happening, but in fact you're playing a trick on them, and so you're cheating in some way, you're deluding them in some way, and that's what magic is perceived to be. He said in there that he got to a point in his life where he did these tricks so long and so often and knew it so well that he got to a stage that was beyond believing, to a stage that he called knowing. And when he knew that he could perform these tricks, he could do it without the delusion, without the smoke and the mirrors, that he had such a powerful knowing within him that that knowing allowed him to enter this world that this author described it as real magic. I've had glimpses of this in my life, and all of us have. Everyone listening will have had examples and glimpses of magical things that cannot be explained with a rational mind, but we have a tendency to believe that they're just some chaotic happenstance, that they have nothing to do with rational, scientific, left-brained analysis. And my point in doing this book and these tapes is in helping people to see that there's much more to it than just luck and just happenstance.
You'll see a whole new world with real magic, making miracles in all areas of your life. Spirituality, serenity, and success, as you define it, are absolutely available to you. These aren't reserved for the lucky or the chosen few. There's no trick involved, because all you have to do to change your life is change your mind. It's simply a matter of connecting with a tremendous power that resides in all of us. This power will give you the ability to create things in your life that you only imagined up till now. Do you feel stressed and overburdened? Then listen to the Spiritual Dozen and take the first steps to miracle making. Do you want to have a magical relationship? Then concentrate on developing spiritual partnerships like the ones outlined here. Whether you're working with a business partner or your life's partner, these techniques will make a profound difference in your interactions with others. In fact, you'll be able to make wonderful shifts in the way you do anything with this Nightingale Conant program. You can start with small things, then apply these techniques to more important matters as you progress along this purposeful path.
Miracles. Miracles, which is what I'm talking about here. I mean, it was Christ who was the miracle worker. Even the least among you can do all that I have done and even greater things. Now, I take that literally. I take that to mean that within you is this magnificent, omnipotent, omnipresent, all-knowing, all-seeing, divine, invisible intelligence.
Your guide for this journey will be world-famous speaker and author Dr. Wayne Dyer. He's plotted this roadmap to miracles through his own life experiences, experiences which include 8 books, among them bestsellers Your Erroneous Zones, You'll See It When You Believe It, and Real Magic, upon which this program is based. Wayne has recorded several best-selling Nightingale Conant audio and video programs. There's Transformation, The Awakened Life, and Choosing Your Own Greatness. And he's a recipient of the Toastmasters International Golden Gavel Award and a member of the International Speakers Hall of Fame. This series of live and studio recordings is arranged so that you'll first hear the theory that will help you realign your thought processes, then you'll learn the practical application of this theory to make real magic in your life. As you'll hear in this segment, the first step to becoming your own miracle maker is to remove the doubt that magic is possible in your life. Wayne has a dramatic illustration of how the power of belief worked for him in a simple tennis match.
I was in a tennis match, and it was set point. The fella hit the ball, and I was meditating my way through the match. What you begin to do is you begin to realize that anything that you're doing in your life, whether it's golf or tennis or making a pie or running your business or whatever, you can shift to this level of consciousness where you can go within and access this divine guidance that you are. It isn't something that's outside of you. It is within you. And you begin to access it. And you can do it at any time. And it's what they call zoning in some sports. It's what a Czechoslovakian author named Csizmalomalovsky or something, he's written a book called Flow. And in flow, you get to this divinely perfect place where you are at one with your environment. And so I find myself, when I'm not playing well in tennis matches, I find myself shifting to this new consciousness and just meditating, just access and getting. And I was in such a powerful state, and we were playing a team that was far superior to my partner and I. They hit a ball that would have made it deuce. The ball hit over in the corner, and I was standing over here. And it was hit so hard that there was no possibility of my being able to run over and get it. But instinctively, when you're in flow, you let your body do things that it can't do. And this ball hit over in the corner, and I took off in this sort of semi-meditative zone state of mine. And I took off as fast as I could, and I got over here, and I just reached my racket out, and I hit the ball back for a winner, and we walked off the court. Now, the other two guys were going back to continue the game, and there was a whole crowd around there watching because this was in a tournament, and they said, he must have bounced twice. And they said, no, it didn't bounce twice. He got to the ball. And they asked me, how could you possibly have gotten to that ball? And I said, you're not going to believe this. But on my way to the ball, I saw it stop in midair and wait for me to get there. Listen to the display quote for real magic. This is from Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who wrote The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Old STC, as he called himself when he wrote his own epitaph. He said, what if you slept? And what if in your sleep you dreamt? And what if in your dream you went to heaven? And there picked a strange and beautiful flower? And what if, when you awoke, you held the flower in your hand? Ah, what then? And what then indeed? Because I know, I've played a lot of tennis in my life. And on three occasions in my life, when I was so connected, that ball has waited for me. Even the least among you can do all that I have done and even greater things. I mean, changing water into wine like this makes making a tennis ball hold for a second or two small potatoes, doesn't it? You've got to know that in the unified field, all things are possible. As St. Mark said, to him that believeth, all things are possible. Not just some, not a few, all things. The power of knowing can create in your world what you previously thought of as absolutely impossible. Miracles are there.
This concept of knowing and believing, I've produced tapes called You'll See It When You Believe It. I have written an entire book that was a wonderful success and sort of applying metaphysics about believing. And it's at this point in my life where I've come to an understanding that there's something beyond believing that I call knowing. Now, everybody listening who has ever ridden a bicycle knows that they can ride it. When you go to do this, when you haven't done it for 15 years, you don't use your mind to say, I wonder if I can do this. I haven't been on a bike in 15 years. I don't know if I'm going to fall off. There's none of that. There's just this powerful knowing that isn't a belief. It is a knowing. And then you go out and you get on the bike and you ride around. And you can do that for some of the physical things that you can create in your life, such as swimming, for example. If you've ever learned to swim, you may not have been in a pool for 20 years, but you can dive in and you know you're not going to drown. You know it, right? You don't believe it. You know it. Now, I had a really interesting experience just recently. I have been having a dream for the last 15 or 20 years, one of those recurring kinds of dreams. I am back in my youth, and in my youth, I grew up in the Detroit area, and I was a hockey player. And so I was really good at ice skating. I loved to ice skate, and I spent many, many, many hours of my life on skates. And I can watch the Olympics, and I can watch them doing their double axels and their triple spins and their reverses. And I say to my kids, I can do that. And they go, oh, yeah, sure, you could. I said, yeah, I can. I can twirl around and spin, and I can skate backwards, and I can do circles, and I can do axels and jumps, and I can do it. Yeah, come on, Dad, you can't do that. I said, yeah, I really can. When was the last time you were on skates? 1958. Dad, you know, that's 34 years. I said, yeah, but I still know how to skate. Now, in this dream, I am back on skates, and I'm in a pond, and the pond is out in the middle of the woods, and the woods are silent, except for some birds and a few squirrels, and it's like the middle of winter, and I can go out, and I'm on this lake, and it's frozen solid, like really, really, and I can just skate and flow with the wind and feel the coldness against me, and I'm out, and I'm twirling, and I'm doing this backwards things. So this dream has been a recurring dream for a long time. Now, I suggest, as I tell this, that you be careful about what you dream about, because dreams are created with the same brain that you create this physical world that you think of as different than the dream world that you're in. The same brain is doing this. The same you is doing this. It's not like there's two separate brains operating there. So what you dream about, your brain is capable of perceiving and creating in the world. So I arrive in Lancaster, Massachusetts to spend a week with Dr. Chopra, Deepak Chopra, who has some wonderful tapes that were published here at Nightingale Conan. And I'm three times a year now, we go, my wife goes, or I go, or we go together to his center for the practice of Ayurvedic medicine. And essentially what we do is we go there for a week, and in that week you go through this wonderful treatment, and you cleanse yourself, and you detoxify yourself, and you meditate a lot. And I had been on the property before. They've got 130 acres in Lancaster, Massachusetts, just an exquisite place. So I get there, and it's really, really cold. Now, I live in Florida, okay? So this kind of weather is something that I was used to when I was a little boy. But I am so exhilarated to be back at Deepak's center that the cold is just, it doesn't make any difference. No one could believe at home that I was actually going to Massachusetts in January, but I was really looking forward to being up there, and that was the only time I could arrange the schedule. So I got there, and I went for this walk in the woods, and there, is about a mile into the woods, half a mile or so, is this pond that I've been dreaming about for 20 years. I mean, it's like a replica, and I started getting that chilled feeling all over, like, I've been here before, like that deja vu, and I closed my eyes, and I realized that this is that recurring dream that I've been having, and it's now manifested here in this other bigger dream, this 100-year dream that I'm in, instead of this 8-hour dream that I go into. And there's one fellow out there, his name is Mark, and he's out there skating. And I recognized Mark, and I'd seen, because I've known him from my previous visits there. And I said, Mark, this is great. And I walked out in the middle of the pond, and it had what they call black ice. I don't know if you've ever experienced black ice. But black ice is like you look down, and all you can see is darkness. From the surface straight down, it's just black. And it's pure. And it's thick. And the ice is 16, 18 inches thick, because it's been so cold for so long. And the surface of the ice is just unblemished. It was just perfect. And I was getting excited being there. So I said to Mark, I said, Mark, I have got to have some ice skates. And he said, well, it's Saturday and, you know, there's no place, but I know a place in town, and next week I'll see if I can get you. I said, I reached into my pocket and I took out a sizable amount of money. And I said to Mark, I really need these skates today. And I said, and you can keep the change. And that evening, I had a pair of skates manifested in my room with my thought and a sizable amount of money, which helps in this larger dream. And Mark is wonderful, and he didn't really do it for the money. I don't want to leave that impression, but it was just he went out and went out of his way and made it happen, and I had a brand new pair of ice skates. Brand new. And I walked back down. It was dark by now, and I walked back down to that pond with those skates, and I had this knowing, this powerful knowing. And the knowing was that I could do everything I had done on skates, even though it had been 34 years since I'd had on a pair of skates. And I laced up those skates, and I had excitement. The adrenaline was flowing in my body. And I was all alone out there. And I went onto that ice, and I skated around there. And for that week, I skated 23 hours, right? So that was over 3 hours every single day, morning, afternoon, evening, whatever I could get a free moment, I would be out there just skating and feeling the wind. And the interesting thing about this knowing that I had, and that I challenge you as you listen to this story and you listen to these tapes, is that the body that I had in 1958 was my 1958 model. That was my 18-year-old model. If you were to do a chemical analysis of that 1958 model and do what they call radioisotope studies and analyze all of the cells and all of the molecules and all of the atoms and all of the chemistry, all of the nitrogen and the hydrogen and the oxygen and all of the physicalness of my body, including my brain and including the femurs in my legs and the bones and the muscle and the blood and every aspect, every down to the tiniest atom, my current model doesn't have anything left in it physically, including my brain cells from my 1958 model. And yet I still had this knowing. So that the knowing that I brought to that pond from that dream is real magic. The knowing is not physical, nor is it lodged any place in my physiology. Every so often, every very regularly, you are constantly changing your physiology. But the awareness that allows you to be able to know is somewhere other than in your physical being. It's not in your brain. It's not in your physical memory. It's not located in your cells anyplace. Somehow that knowing is beyond that. If you can take this knowing, which is beyond a belief, and begin to apply it in all areas of your life and understand that it is a part of you and it is outside of you, it is in everything in the universe, that knowing, that pure awareness, once you get that and know about that pure awareness and recognize that you can access it, and as you access it, you can begin to use it, you will then know the experience of real magic. What we have to understand is that this physical body that we are in is a result of something that I call an organizing intelligence that is in the universe. The way that we access this real magic is to understand this organizing intelligence. Right? This organizing intelligence takes the limited number of minerals, the carbon, the oxygen, the nitrogen, the whatever it is, and it takes those very same minerals and it shapes them in some mysterious way into certain things, like the horn on a rhinoceros is made up of the very same stuff physically that your brain is made up of, that your liver is made up of, that a rose is made up of, that rocks are made up of. It's the same stuff physically. But somehow this organizing intelligence that takes these minerals and shapes them and molds them in such a way that this one, when you arrange the atoms in a certain way, will come out to be a rhinoceros's horn, this will be a butterfly's wing, this will be a rose, and this will be a human being. We are all made up of this same physical stuff, but there's an organizing intelligence that flows through all of us. how we have to access this is we have to rid ourselves of what I call the big lie. And there's this huge lie. It's just an outright prevarication that we are conditioned to accept and know. You see, we know what we can't do, and we know what we can't accomplish. And we know that just as much as we know what we can do. Just like the ice skating or the bicycle or the swimming, those things that we have at the level of our cells, we also have the knowing of what we can't do. And I can only jump so high, and I can only run so fast, and I can only be so happy, and I can only create so much wealth, and I can only be so successful, and if I'm a girl, if I'm female, I can only accomplish so much because this is the society that I live in is going to restrict me, and you know, you have to do things a certain way. And so we inculcate in ourselves and in our children this awareness of what we can't accomplish. And that is labeled doubt. Now, doubt at the quantum level, which is at the subatomic level, doubt interferes with what is manifested in the world. Now, this is hard for us to believe. And what they have discovered, pure science has discovered this, that we're not made up of physical things at all. That at the very subatomic level, what we're made up of is energy. Something that is invisible. It's this organizing intelligence. And that particles at the subatomic level don't behave like particles. They're all connected. And there's this invisible intelligence that flows through them all. And that they're all on purpose. And that there's no chaos. There's order in all of it. And that it's all perfect. And that our very material selves are made up of that spiritual quality. And that it's not outside of us at all. It's within us. This organizing intelligence flows through everything, and the essential building blocks of who you are as a human being, it is within you and in every atom of your being. Now, you say, so what? Well, once you know that it's within you, you ask the question, well, if I doubt that it is, you see, when you get to this quantum level and you start doubting something, that doubt is that invisible intelligence. And that doubt interferes with your ability to know it, to experience it. So that faith, which was something that you used to have in order to experience the spiritual outside of yourself, now becomes something that you have to know in order to transcend this physical world and manifest miracles. You've got to rid yourself of the doubt. Now, I have discovered that when I know I can't do something, and I have that inbred in me from the time I'm a little boy, it really takes intense work to get it out. So I've always known that I'm not good at art, and I'm not good at music, and I'm not good at cooking, abstract kinds of things like that. But this cooking area was really interesting because my mother-in-law, Helen, she left school when she was very young, I think in the 7th or 8th grade, left home and had some really tough times as a young person, lived in an orphanage for a long time, got married when she was very young, had children as a real young person, lived in the Depression. She had learned a lot of things about what she can't do and can do, like all of us have, all of this doubt that we have, this fear that we have as our mode of learning. And she becomes my mother-in-law. She went to, you know, she was in Kentucky and in West Virginia, and these were her places, her growing up places. And so she always was she was in the kitchen, and she was very good at what she did in the kitchen. And she can make a lemon meringue pie like nobody in the world can make. I mean, world-class lemon meringue pie. And I watch her make the pie. Now, I've always known I can't do this, because every time I did it, everybody would laugh. Oh, there goes Wayne. And I used to enjoy piddling around in the kitchen, but everybody said, oh, you can't bake, and you're not good at that sort of thing. And I had this knowing that I can't do it, just like I had this knowing that I could ice skate. But I want to get rid of the knowing. I want to change that. I want to access this new magic, whatever. I said to my mother-in-law, all right, this is what we're going to do. I am going to do everything that you do in the physical world. All right? Sunday afternoon, come on over, bring your lemon meringue pie all of the things that you use, all the ingredients, bring your bowls, bring everything. We're going to do it in the same oven. We're going to do it at the same temperature. If you shake a little bit when you put in this little bit of salt, I'm going to shake in the same way. If you grease the pan, I'm going to grease it. I'm going to wear the same clothes that you do. I mean, we're going to do step by step, follow the ingredients, do everything in the recipe exactly the way you do, and I'm going to manifest this perfect pie. Just like you do every time. I mean, I can describe it. It's got that white meringue on it with the little brown curlicues on the top of it. Just exquisite, always perfect. So we follow, and I do every single thing that she does to the letter. We put it in the same oven at the same temperature for the exact same amount of time on the same shelf. But always in the back of my mind is this doubt. I wonder. I don't think I can. It never enters her mind that she can't do this. She's laughing through the whole thing and just having a wonderful time and giggling and saying, you don't really think you can do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do everything you do. Hers comes out, and you could have sent it to the Betty Crocker cook-off. It was perfect. And mine looked like a Frisbee. Flattened, and the meringue was all soggy wet in there, and instead of having brown curlicues, they were black and burnt. And how do you explain that? I mean, how does anyone explain that the belief that you have, the doubt that you have, affects that which you do in the physical world on a molecular level, on a cellular level? And this is exactly what quantum mechanics is teaching us. This is what is the inhibitor to experiencing magic in your life. If you have the doubt, you have to become a student who is willing and ready to access a new way of being, to get this divine organizing intelligence that is who you are, that is within you. You have to know that it isn't outside of you. It's not something that Helen got and I didn't get. It's not that somebody's special talent isn't something that was given to them but through the blessings of the organization of their molecules, but it is in that knowing. There's a wonderful poem by William Blake, which describes this thing that I'm talking about here. And he says it this way. He said, "To see the world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, to hold eternity in the palm of your hand and infinity in an hour, we are led to believe a lie when we see with, not through the eye, which was born in a night to perish in a night when the soul slept in beams of light." When I look at that poem, I see that we have been led to believe a lie. And until we can eradicate that lie from our lives, we will continue to believe that we see with, not through the eye. And as Blake says, the eye, like all of your physiology, was born in a night to perish in a night. That's what the physical world is about. It's born in a night to perish in a night. But the soul, this invisible, divine, organizing intelligence, slept in beams of light, formless, dimensionless, forever. That's where you have to go, to that place that scientists, who are now telling us what metaphysicians said for centuries, that it's within you, that the kingdom of heaven is within you, that bliss is who you are, that in every cell of your being there is a physical world, and then there is a silent, empty, invisible space in there as well. And that silent, empty, invisible space is what you have to access, go to, be able to know that it's there, that you're not alone, that that divine guidance is there for you. Realign yourself so that you are a spiritual being having a human experience instead of the other way around. Realign yourself to know that how I use that invisible intelligence, that divine organizing soul, that God that is within me, how I access that is what determines what my entire physical life is. And if I doubt it, even for a split second, if I doubt it, it's going to impact on the outcome of everything that I do. And if you're listening to these words and you doubt that and you think that that's not possible, that is what is going to be manifested for you in your life. One of the things I do when I am having doubt, Like if something comes into my life that I really want to go away and don't and believe that I've got the lesson for whatever it is, and I've got the lesson, okay, now I want to send it out. And if I have the thought that I can't do this or that this is bigger than I am or so on, I remind myself in the quiet moments that my thoughts are creating this stress that I'm experiencing in my stomach or wherever I'm experiencing it in my body. And instead of just trying to pretend that that thought isn't there, I just say, next. Like, okay, I've had that thought, now I'll take the next one. And it's like almost instant relief from that tension or from that fear. And then if I have a tendency to bring that thought back, notice I don't say the thought just comes back, because I bring it back. I'm in control of these thoughts. If I have a tendency to bring it back, because that's how I've habitually trained myself to handle crises, by just thinking about it and analyzing it and performing this intellectual violence on it by analyzing it over and over and cutting it up, and that's how I've trained myself to do that, and that's not something that I have to have. There are people who have very quiet minds in the world who go into silence for 12 years, you know, don't even speak. There are people who can handle crises and know that it's only a crisis if I process it as a crisis. There are people who know that. So if I'm not there at that moment, next thought, and it's like a slideshow. You know, it's like you click and you bring on another thought and you bring on another thought. And if you do this enough time with repetition, constantly repeating yourself, you eventually create the new molecules that don't allow those thoughts to do anything that is destructive to you. But I used a key word in there, and the key word is fear. Those fearful thoughts are the opposite of love. And what you have to really learn how to do in order to experience real magic is to eradicate the fear and begin to say, what is it that I'm afraid of? Who can really hurt me? What is my corner of freedom? What can really happen to me? Am I afraid of being put down? Am I afraid of failing? Am I afraid of disapproval? Am I afraid of someone not liking me? Am I afraid of not making money? Am I afraid of not getting the promotion I want or not closing the deal? Now, the opposite of fearful thoughts is acceptance or tolerance or kindness or love or acceptance, love and fear. If you know what love is, it's because you've let go of fear. And when you let go of fear, you've let go of doubt. And when you begin to realize that nobody can hurt you and nobody's opinion can do anything to you, and that there may be physical consequences to some of your behavior and so on, but that the pain that you're afraid of, the rejection that you're afraid of, is all in your mind, it's all in your thoughts, and you realize how empowering it is to not be concerned about that any longer and to let that go and to think in non-fearful ways, before long, you start to process your whole world in a whole new way. The doubt has stopped. I can do this is substituted for I don't know if I can. The I don't know if I can originates from some crazy kind of fear that is only a mental process. But that fear creates the chemicals that create all kinds of dis-ease, not only physically in your life, but in your relationships, and in your ability to manifest prosperity, and in your ability to create health for yourself, and in your ability to have the kind of talent that you want, and to have the mental stability, and to have the relationships that you would like to have, and to have your business go the way you would like, and to have your relationship to your children be the way you... Have a knowing. When you were a little baby and you were crawling, and then you stood up for the first time, you weren't worried about whether or not you could do that again. You knew it. It was built in. You have that confidence within you to do it. See, you are born with the instinct to know. And in the first few years of your life, if you don't have someone who's really knocking you down, you're doing that. You know, you gurgle, and then after you gurgle, you try to get a little letter out, and eventually you get a little sound out, and then that sound turns into a sentence, and that sentence turns into a language. And you don't ever tell yourself, I'm never going to get this English language. It's just too much to it. Verbs and pronouns and dangling participles. There's none of that. That all comes later with doubt and fear. Knowing and trust are your inheritance.
This is the end of Side 1. Side 2 is already queued up for your listening.